Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is one of our favorite guests, Legal and Blackjack Hall of Famer, Bob Nersessian. We'll be talking to Bob in a few minutes. Richard is actually in the studio tonight. He's been away for more than a month in Texas, either getting ready to make a movie or perhaps playing the secret game. He'll be returning to Texas shortly to resume whatever it was he was really doing. Is there anything you can tell us about this project, Richard?
Well, it just, normally when movies keep getting delayed, it's because they don't have the money. And in this case, we actually do have the money, but we've been chasing actors is what's happened. We sort of got stuck on an actor that we made an offer to, and he kind of played us. And then eventually we, realized he wanted to just keep his options open for as long as possible, and we had to pull the offer. So now we're out looking for an actor again.
Uh-huh. All right. Are you taking applications? Bob Nersessian's hand just went up. Do you like guys from Detroit?
We're going after a bigger name than Bob Nersessian.
That's so. A lot of letters, Nersessian. All right, now we received a letter addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com concerning playing one coin or five in video poker. In most video poker games, you get the same return per coin bet for all pay schedule categories, except the Royal Flush. Typically, a Royal Flush pays $250 for one if you're playing less than max coins, and $800 for one if you're betting max, which is usually five coins, doesn't have to be. The return for betting one coin instead goes down by 1.2% or so, but you're only betting 20% as much money. It's very possible that there is lower negative EV per hour if you bet one coin, meaning you're going to lose less per hour. Most successful gamblers think in terms of positive EV per hour, but there are times when negative financial EV is in one area can be more than compensated by positive EV in another. The first thing to consider is, what are your goals? If you're trying to drink at a bar for free, betting one quarter at a time very slowly allows you more booze for your buck if the bar will put up with it. If you're on a promotion where you must play a certain amount of time, say 4 hours, in order to qualify for something you want, this might make sense to play one coin, but then the coin in generator will likely kill your offers in the future. If you want to have some bad games on your record, say 6-5 jacks, one coin at a time for a little while might make some sense. The casinos don't want you always playing their best games, so you want to play either bad video poker or slot machines a little bit to get that on your record. But you better check, however, that there's not some good games also on the same physical box. Some player tracking systems assume you're playing the best game on any given box, no matter what you're playing. If you're playing a bad game, say 9-6 jacks or better, or worse with no slot club, you'll lose less by betting one coin at a time, and still less than that by betting zero coins at a time. Betting one coin, you'll occasionally hit a royal flush, and I promise you somebody will come up and tell you what an idiot you are for not having bet max coins when you hit the royal flush. Can you stand to be laughed at? Are you the type of person who will second guess yourself forever and fret about the one that got away? If so, the psychological pain from hitting a single coin royal may outweigh the money you save. assuming our listeners are actually gambling with an edge, which means playing games where the game plus the slot club plus the mailers, etc., is over 100%, it usually makes no sense to play single coins. You're not a video poker player, Richard Jiminy. Comment on that at all?
No, I can't imagine. I mean, the only scenario I can see would be, like you said, trying to get free drinks, but then you could go play a penny slot machine and bet one penny and get your free drinks. So,
but they don't have the penny machines at the bar.
Ah, well.
But, oh well.
And the waitresses stay away from that penny gallery, too.
Yeah, the if the...
Not if you tip.
Yeah, but if
although most guys who are too cheap to actually gamble and want to bet a penny a spin probably don't tip very well.
Well, when they used to have the coin droppers, there were some games at the Golden Nugget that they called by the casino Nickel Heaven, and the waitresses called it Nickel Hell because guys would tip 15 cents for a beer or something, and waitresses didn't show up there. All right, let's talk to our guest. Bob Nersessian has been on the show numerous times talking about legal issues. Tonight, we'll be addressing some legal matters that have been in the news recently. Bob Nersessian, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, and I really just enjoyed that brief interlude where I actually got to talk about something for all of 4 seconds that wasn't legal. But
oh, it was illegal.
Sounds like you have a lot of experience trying to get cocktail waitresses' attention in casinos.
Oh, my goodness. Let's go back to legal stuff.
All right. All right. We taped a show a couple months ago, but last week we aired a show featuring two players, David and Kyle, who received $200,000 from a casino in Mesquite, Nevada, basically because they were illegally detained. This was a Bob Nersessian case. Congratulations on our win. One of our readers wants to know, if this had been in Indian casinos, would the players have been likely to win?
No. That was a very short little interchange. I'm actually working on that right now a little bit, and I've got a case going in the Ninth Circuit. The general rule is, I think that... you'll have a real tough time in every jurisdiction in this country unless you can bring in local state actors with the Indian actors. For example, a case I had that did result in a substantial payout and other parts of it are still going on dealt with the Indian casino bringing in the local sheriff's office as well as the state gaming commission, as well as the state police. And when that happened and there was an illegal detention with the participation of everybody, the court looked at it and, at least as to the state actors, just up and granted summary judgment.
Huh. So would you take a case?
No.
Like David and Kyle's, if it had happened at an Indian casino?
I've turned away dozens of them.
Oh, really?
And you've heard me on this show before, and I think I even mentioned, I hope I'm not going to get beeped here. Do we get beeped on this show? Oh, we do. All right.
Lawrence has become alert all of a sudden. Finger moved to a button.
I'm writing a paper, or whatever you might want to call it, that is entitled Indian Casinos, OMG, W, etc.
TF?
Yes. Did I get beeped? No. Oh, okay. And it's just because of this stuff. It's I know that the professional gambling or advantage gambling is a profession that says we can't avoid Indian casinos, and I feel that's a shame because until they're brought into the rule of law that the rest of the country has to follow, I would avoid them like the plague. Generally.
Yeah,
now,
unfortunately.
Other exceptions, though. When you get an Indian casino like Harrah's Rincon.
Uh-huh.
Okay. See that Harrah's in the front?
Uh-huh.
Well, you can sue half of them, and they don't get hot sovereign immunity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, there are too many casinos that are owned by the Indians, and often they're, you know, sort of 20 years behind you know, some of the other places. So.
Another one that I saw that just drove me a little nuts is, and I hope my numbers are right, but I'm not sure. One of the big ones I understand in Mississippi is something called Coushatta.
Coushatta?
Yeah, something like that. Anyway.
I think that's, it's not Mississippi.
Wherever
I think,
it is.
Yeah, Oklahoma maybe, or...
600 big huge casino.
Yeah.
More floor space than the M. 650 members to the tribe, from what I understand. And this tribe, I think, employs 121 police officers.
Wow.
I mean, and you know, they're really police officers for the casino, but they have sovereign immunity. They get a $400,000 grant from the federal government, and then they do things to people, and this sovereign immunity, if they do things to people, this sovereign immunity turns around and says, neener, 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 you got to sue us in Indian court, which, okay, you have 650 people. How often does your court meet next year? I don't know that that's the actual case, but wow. I've run into similar stuff. I'm just working off the numbers that I saw on this tribe. But for other tribes and other Indian casinos, I've seen those types of results.
So on this illegal detainment, assuming it was in a non-tribal casino, how aggressively should a player refuse to show ID in the hopes of illegal detainment and a big payoff?
I've answered this question on this show before, too. And if a client comes into my office and it becomes even alluded to that, oh, I took my actions because I looked at the EV of hiring Bob Nersessian and bringing a lawsuit for illegal detainment, that's a person without a lawyer. Okay.
Or without you.
Generally without a lawyer, because there aren't a whole lot of other people doing that. And I'll tell you this, too. We're not all pettifoggers and shysters. And as a general rule...
It's the first time we use pettifoggers on this show, Richard. I think so.
That's true.
I think it's the first time pettifogger has been used on American radio since 1908. But that as an aside, I think if you went in to any lawyer and that was your play, or the lawyer was being used as part of the play, they would refuse to take the case. And I can categorically state to you that I have refused to take the case. People have come into my office and asked me that question, and I said, you should never try it, and you should get out of Dodge as fast as you can, because you will never be a client of mine. That's how strongly I feel about that question and just how shady and disgusting it is. People have accused me of being on a mission, and I am on a mission. But I'm not on a mission to make money for gamblers. I'm on a mission to stop illegal seizures. Mm. And I am not going to be co-opted into that kind of thing. The number of reasons, mostly the moral and ethical issues that go with it, too. I'd also lose credibility if I have that kind of client. And who would believe me in the future? That kind of question requires the answer I just gave. The answer I just gave is true to the depths of my soul, and that is not a reason to do anything at a casino, i.e., it is not a reason, or the possible payout in a lawsuit is not a justifiable basis for ordering your actions in any way. Was that strong enough?
I think we got the message.
Well, but the other thing, I think what people don't realize is for every case like this where somebody wins $200,000, there are dozens and dozens of cases where they get nothing, or nothing ever happens, or nobody takes it.
I'm hired.
Well, yeah, but that means that you've already determined that they had a case.
That
I mean, there are a lot of these situations where they actually don't have a case. You know.
Well, then there you go. A Nevada casino can take you into custody and detain you if they suspect cheating and they call the police immediately and the suspicion is reasonable, or if they witness a crime committed by you in their presence and they contact the police and the crime was actually committed. So yes, there are a lot of detainments that are absolutely legitimate. As a general rule, when they're detaining an AP, they've overstepped the bounds because they themselves are on a different agenda from stopping a crime. They are on an agenda of stopping that person.
Yeah.
All right. Different subject. A couple years ago in Atlantic City, the Golden Nugget used pre-sorted Jamaco cards to play Baccarat with. Apparently they didn't burn cards off the top, and the players were able to use the record they made of the order of the banker player on the last shoe to accurately predict what's going to happen on the current shoe. A number of players, primarily Asian, noticed this pattern and started betting heavily. After losing something like $1.5 million, the Golden Nugget pulled the plug. Some players got paid, some didn't. Some players were roughed up a little bit by the Golden Nugget.
Players allegedly roughed up.
Players allegedly sued. The initial court ruling was that the Golden Nugget had to pay the full $1.5 million. They agreed not to appeal this ruling if the players dropped their countersuits about the alleged rough treatment inflicted upon them. The players refused. They expected more because of the rough treatment. A few weeks ago, a ruling came down reversing the earlier decisions. The new ruling says the Golden Nugget doesn't have to pay out any part of the $1.5 million, and in fact, the players have to return what they have already received. This strikes me as outrageous. Bob Nersesi, what do you think is going to happen here?
I think they're going to appeal. I did a little research on the issue. You gave me a heads up that we might be talking about it. It was the same judge that issued both opinions.
Really?
Yes. Okay. And I'm trying to read between the lines. I'm not sure on this and work out in my head as best as what could have happened. The first case was on a motion, and it didn't go to trial. Okay. And what happened was after the motion, they were scheduled for trial, best guess, and Golden Nugget said, let the court know we've settled. Here's where it's at. And some plaintiff's attorneys or some of the gambler's attorneys said, yeah, that's right. And so they took everything off calendar. And that really messes up a court when everything goes off calendar. But they were sure they had it settled. Now everybody is back in the court a year and a half later because the settlement fell apart. They're sitting in front of the same judge. And now this is a very wild extrapolation, but perhaps this explains why you have two different decisions from the same judge. That judge is not a happy person. Okay? Now, well, they've completely messed up his docket. He's got a whole case back on there, huge one, that he thought he had gotten rid of. I'm, again, reading between the lines, but this is the only way I can think of that it comes back to the same judge for the same decision. A motion for reconsideration gets filed by Golden Nugget, again, a wild-ass guess, and the judge looks at it and changes his mind. He actually had an interesting opportunity here. He had an opportunity to write both decisions and then send it all up to the Supreme Court with his analysis in front of the Supreme Court. And either way it goes, it's a New Jersey Appellate Division Court, is going to adopt one of his analyses. So it's a mess. But I don't think that this is by any means the final decision. As to outrage, I think the first decision was absolutely correct. Let's go to a weird thing about his opinion that I picked up through reading the paper. He said, you can't have won because the game was illegal. The game was illegal because the Golden Nugget is required to deal blackjack from a randomly shuffled deck.
Baccarat,
yes. Therefore, if it's an illegal game, the game was void. Okay? And you go back to where everybody started and return everyone to the status quo. That seems to be the last decision. The problem with that is if the game was illegal, then the Golden Nugget was the one who caused the illegality. Equity says you go to the other side if it is one person's fault that something is illegal, number one. The second thing on that issue is that if it is illegal, the rule of illegality says you don't go back to the status quo. Universally under the common law, the rule is you leave everybody where you find them. So where they would be left is the $1 million in chips are just chips that the players hold. The $500,000 paid, they've got, they get to keep. And if the players can somehow leech out the chips over the next whatever years, more power to them. This is another thing that's really missing in my head, too. Where are these chips and why haven't they been leached out?
Yeah,
I,
right.
I would have walked in with some of them for a half, for 50%.
Yeah. I mean, but maybe they have been cashed. Well, but the Golden Nugget would know if they had been cashed.
And everything seems to be written from a perspective of you have to give the chips back, which would indicate that the chips are still extant. I don't get it. Did I confuse everyone enough?
Well, no, I mean, I think the Golden Nugget initially refused to cash them.
Right.
Right? But I would be surprised if the players were still holding all of them.
Except that everything is written as if they are. That's my point. Mm. Now, some of these chips, and that may well be the case, I've been here with clients where if they're $10,000 to $100,000 chips, the casino has such track of them that they could never be leached out,
yeah.
Even something the size of Golden Nugget. But and considering the payouts, a lot of these chips will be of that ilk.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, whatever isn't, like you're saying, Richard, I can't believe they haven't been leached out. I would have been leeching them.
Yeah, and you've had a year to do it,
yeah.
Right? I mean,
all right. Also, Atlantic City was one of the places Phil Ivey got into an interesting situation on Baccarat on our last show.
Well, first, the newspaper article today, Phil Ivey came out and said what he did was nothing but skill.
And clever observation, yes.
And clever observation, right.
Okay.
So
I don't think that changes anything. But on our last show, you indicated that, in your opinion, Bob Nersessian, since Phil did not touch the cards and it was a dealer who turned them per request by Phil Ivey's partner, associate, your opinion, Phil Ivey was not doing anything wrong. But you also said in passing that if it had been a game where the players touched the cards and the players turned the cards around, such as maybe a blackjack game or something, then the players would be guilty of cheating.
I got many emails about this.
Yeah, the problem is that you guys are asking me this question on, once you read in the internet, national radio. I'm going to answer the questions that come up with this, but people aren't going to like the answers, and it's going to be a public record that exists forever. I can't speak to the Phil Ivey thing in particular, but as I understand it, the question is playing the turn or edge sorting cheating, in my opinion? And the answer is, if you do it like Phil Ivey does it, no. If you do it like Bill Zender describes it in Advantage Play for the Casino Executive, yes. Okay? And I even part company with Bill Zender on this. I believe that he thinks it's not. I look at NRS 465.015. And here's what the statute says. First of all, in the general scheme, there's a statute that just says this. It is a crime to cheat.
Oh, okay? Wow. What a surprise.
Yeah. However, cheating is defined. All right? And if they didn't define it somewhere, it would be overbroad and overruled. But as it's defined, it says cheat means to alter the elements of chance, comma, method of selection or criteria which determine A, the result of the game, B, the amount or frequency of payment of the in a game, etc., etc. Okay? The question is, cheat means to alter the elements of chance. Okay? It requires an action by the gambler. Okay. If a gambler is passive, as Phil Ivey was, he's not altering anything. The casino dealer is doing the altering. And I think that the...
But I mean, we know that counting cards is legal, and they're altering the...
No, they're not.
Not the... Well, wait. By turning the cards, you're not altering the game.
Yes, you are.
You're altering the elements of chance.
If you know that the next card is an right. 8 or lower...
It doesn't mean I'm more likely to get a particular card.
But it does mean that you will hit a 13 if you know the next card is an 8 or lower, whereas you might normally have stood on the 13 if you didn't know that.
So...
It's the physical touching of the cards by the player, in my opinion, that brings it into the cheating statute.
So by that logic, then, cutting, if you see a card and you cut the bottom card to a particular location and bet into it, then that
Why are you trying to make things worse than what I said?
I understand. But let me ask you this. What about when the casino routinely alters the random outcome of games? Why can nothing be done to them when they alter the random outcome of a game?
First of all, I think casinos should be prosecuted for cheating in 1,000 different ways.
Oh, okay.
I think that it is absolutely cheating for surveillance to count down a deck and signal in for a reshuffle when the deck goes positive. And I have records that show that casinos do that. And I have said in court that that is cheating, that is illegal, that is a felony. And my client got arrested while he was being stolen from. Now, the judge laughed at me, but I'm confident that I was correct and that that is cheating. Okay? When that guy calls in for a shuffle because that deck went positive for the player, that is using a device, the camera, for the purpose of gaining an advantage in a game, the blackjack game, and the advantage has been capitalized by the surveillance guy calling in. Yes, casinos cheat. They do it regularly. I have not had much success in getting any of them prosecuted, but I work at it. I worked at it with mind play, and I'll work at it with some other things too, because I think that a lot of what's going on here is evil beyond belief with casinos. When a player counts, he's not using a device to enter into the game. When a casino counts, they are.
Well, yeah, because the casino can shuffle the cards, like
no,
you said.
No, the device is the camera. If
oh,
you
yeah.
actually
and
train,
actually,
if
the
you,
guy in surveillance is probably typing it into a computer.
I've seen the reports where they did that.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've had those reports sitting in front of a judge, and the judge saying, "That's inadmissible. Why is it inadmissible that the casino is cheating, Your Honor? Because that's only your word that they're cheating, and I have no evidence that it's cheating. I should be allowed to argue it, Your Honor. Not in this court." Okay?
Wow. Yeah.
Well, all right. So let's...
And that's not the only time casinos cheat.
Right.
You're talking to the choir here. All right. So let's change subjects.
How can you change the subject from something that sexy?
He's something he's fired up about. Gosh darn it.
It's like...
I don't think gosh darn it's in my vernacular.
I didn't want to get beeped by...
Pettifogger is, though. Okay. Yeah, right. So, also in the news, a horse player from Omaha, Nebraska won $63.50, but somehow the clerk misread the ticket and paid him more than $6,000. The player left the track immediately. Go figure. No surprise, the track wants its money back. The track has filed a complaint alleging theft. The question is, is what the player did felony theft or simply taking innocent advantage of an opportunity that presented itself?
And where did this occur?
Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, wasn't he actually arrested for theft?
I don't think so.
Oh, I thought he was.
Well, you may have read something later than I did. The last I read about it is the district attorney was trying to decide whether or not to prosecute this.
Okay. Well, as always, I tend to have an opinion on about any esoteric thing you ask me. In this one, to get complicated for the listeners again, It depends. This is entirely reliant on the statutory scheme available or enacted in the state where the incident occurred. I can tell you from my research what the result is in Nevada. And Nevada is a very strong common law state, so I will assume that it pours over into Oklahoma. Question one, can the racetrack or casino get the money back? Absolutely not. Never, ever, ever, not, no matter how nasty or how big it is. Okay? Why? Because casinos and racetracks cannot sue on gambling debts. They have no ability to bring an action to recover money taken from a gambling game, even if it's the wrong amount of money, etc. Okay? Second, that doesn't change the fact, at least in Nevada, I don't know what the statutes are in Oklahoma, that there is a statute that makes it a felony to take, I think, over $500 from an overpayment that is not due you. Okay? Those aren't the exact words, but most states have enacted that to prevent, to make it a crime to walk away from the ATM that starts spitting out money like in a Laurel and Hardy movie.
If an ATM does, you should stop at 480, is what you're saying?
I think that's the number in Nevada. I think what you should do is hope that nothing has gotten your face and turn around quickly and surreptitiously have as much money as you can land in your hand. No, I don't know what to do there. I think you turn it in and say, and then do a, depending on the amount of money, do a big public thing, making yourself a great person and forcing the bank into an interesting position of having to reward you for your honesty with maybe even more than you would have gotten away with. So you can't sue on a gambling debt. I did it again. I keep hitting the table. I apologize. So I guess we don't know what it is in Oklahoma. It could go either way. But the one thing that it likely is not, or the one thing that is likely not to occur, is any great benefit to the racetrack.
I don't know. The racetrack, I mean, the racing industry has a really strong lobby. And, you know, strong lobbies get to write laws for themselves. So it wouldn't surprise me if this guy ended up having to...
Well, apparently a whole bunch of people got to give back $1 million out there in Atlantic City,
right,
by the latest ruling.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised if the $5,500 or whatever it is has to go back too. You're catching very solidly, Richard, the idiosyncrasies of every case that goes in front of the idiosyncrasies of every judge that deals with the idiosyncrasies of the rule of law that result in things where that say that you have a better chance of calling a craps game.
Yeah.
All right. Now I got a question for Richard, not Bob Nersessian. Now, you've been working at an expert witness in a blackjack case. It was recently settled. Can you tell us about this? And perhaps it'll lead to questions for Bob Nersessian.
Yeah, it was... Well, getting back to what Bob was saying earlier about the casino has the right to detain you if you've committed a crime. So in this particular case, the crime that they were claiming the person committed was malicious trespass. So what happened was this was not in Nevada. This was in Pennsylvania. This player went in, counted cards, played for a couple of hours, and then tried to leave. And they wouldn't let him leave. And he said, I want to leave. And they were like, no, we're not going to let you leave. And eventually they held him there and called in the police, who then arrested him for malicious trespass.
Could have happened in Nevada.
Okay. And what was interesting...
That's the Lori Tao case here, but it's a similar case.
Maybe. I mean, it was really interesting for me because this was the first time I've been an expert witness. I didn't really understand what, you know, what am I there for? I mean,
I'm wondering, what are you there for, Richard?
Yeah, well, what they wanted was they wanted some things that I thought were odd. Like, they wanted me to talk about how common it is for players to use other names. But in this particular case, now they brought in their own expert witness, who was this guy who cited chapter and verse from the, you know, from the Hera's rewards program rule book. In this particular case, the player gave no name, didn't give a false name, didn't give any name, didn't give a player's card, never asked for a comp of any sort, just played completely anonymously, got up, and they wouldn't let him leave, you know. So, I wrote a report, you know, I wrote my official findings, such as they were, and I sort of said their expert witness was an idiot because he was talking about things that were completely irrelevant to the case. But then, as you say, they did settle the case, and I'm not privy to the terms. And one of the things I was really happy
did
about.
Did this guy go to jail?
Well, no, he was in handcuffs in the police thing there, but he didn't go to jail. But one of the things I was happy with Kyle and David was that they did not, they would not agree to a non-disclosure, that they wanted to be able to talk about, you know, the case and what the casino had done. In this particular case, there was a non-disclosure. So
it's ordinarily that way, and David and Kyle had special circumstances where we were able to do that.
But what do you think would happen if you had a case such as this one and you just said, hey, my client says he will not sign a settlement that includes a non-disclosure? Are they really going to take it to court over that?
Yeah.
Wow.
You hear me talk about a lot of my cases, okay? The majority of my cases that settle have non-disclosures.
Hmm.
Okay. What you just described is a case like, excuse me, a case that I've had a number of times. It is a winner. The casinos always say trespass, and it leads me into, you asked, maybe this will give some other things for Bob, and one that has started happening and is driving me bat crap crazy, okay, is the casinos now have taken it upon themselves. And I think the first time I get one of these casinos in front of a jury is just going to bury them. But the casinos say, we have the right to 86. A player, a card counter, a legal player goes up there with, oh, 20 grand to cash out. They go, no, we're not cashing your chips. You have to leave. He says, why aren't you cashing my chips? They said, we told you to leave. I'm calling gaming, the player says. Excuse me. I'm calling gaming, the player says. We're calling the police. The police show up, and because that guy didn't leave, they arrest him, and the casino charges him with trespassing.
Huh. Now, in this particular case, it was really funny because the casino first said... I'll let you I'll talk while you cough. The casino first said, we didn't detain him, right? But they have all this videotape of him clearly being detained and him saying, I just want
to
leave, let me leave.
Pointing
I just
to the door.
Yeah. And they won't let him, you know. And then they said that they were detaining him because he might give a fake name and try to avoid a CTR. But, you know, in my report, I pointed out that there was no transaction of anywhere close to $10,000, and he never gave a false name, and there was never a CTR, so it doesn't make any sense that they're detaining him because he might, if he were to file a CTR, give a false name, you know.
Can you say what casino it was?
I think so, yeah. It was Harris Chester.
It was a Harrah's.
Yeah, and I mean, this casino had apparently lost a very similar lawsuit to the same person just a few years prior, you know. And you would think Harrah's would learn after all the lawsuits they've lost.
Well, somebody dropped a dime on me, or a phrase on me today that I thought was so poignant.
Uh-huh.
He goes, the problem is that you got people making $12 an hour that have the ability to cost the casino $25,000 a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so true.
But the and back on the one I was talking about, just to add one other thing here, the statutes say that if they don't pay you, you are to get a hold. Actually, not even you. The casino is required to get gaming out there. And instead of getting gaming out there, they're 86ing and having people arrested. I think your case, this case, these people are beyond the pale. They're out of control, and we need some courts to bring them into line.
And that's
and
why
I'm
we
sorry
got
that
you,
one's
Bob.
Settled. The one you're talking about. That's my dream case. I get that case. I've had that case, and that case has resulted in multiple six-figure jury verdicts.
Wow.
Yeah. So how many more six-figure jury verdicts does it need to happen before?
Obviously, you know, they have very deep pockets. I mean, they don't seem to.
I don't know. I'll be going after a casino very soon here because they felt that they could just hold somebody's money, and then they enlisted the feds to come and get the money without a crime. The feds took the money.
Wow. Why the feds?
Because
the drugs.
Let's go back to my last meeting here with you guys. Uh-huh. Okay, all levels of government are out of control on civil forfeiture. They see money, they believe it's theirs. They just do. I don't know. Maybe the feds think, well, the Treasury printed it. That must mean it's ours because we are the same people. I don't know why. They just do. And they're getting away with it forever. You know, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. Well, maybe I am, but I try to stay away from that kind of stuff. But my gosh, go on YouTube and run down some of this stuff or look at some of the websites that discuss civil forfeiture. You can't walk away without feeling ashamed for this country and the rule of law and what it's gone to. It's that despicable.
I want to go back to expert witnesses because, okay, as I said, this was my first time and I was a little bit perplexed by the whole thing. Do you use them and how would you use them? And
me, I use them in rebuttal sometimes, try not to. You know, my best experience with an expert witness was the guy we just talked about a few minutes ago, Bill Zender. Generally, I read the reports, and you just said, you laid out a lot of things there, Richard, about what you saw wrong with this guy's report, and I have two other levels of experience beyond that in dealing with courts and dealing with the law. And I think I can probably find another dozen things wrong with it and put that guy on the stand and make him my expert.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I give you an example real quick?
No.
Tell you what. Can we? And I'm not sure how long that's going to last.
It'll last a minute.
Go for it.
All right. Had an expert on the stand. Had his resume. He listed out that he was the editor of a newsletter/magazine within his industry. Did all the research I could. He's there on the stand. Got his CV in front of him. I said, look down here. See this magazine here? Are you currently the editor? Yes. Where can I buy this? Buy it? Yes. Where can I buy a copy? I want to buy a copy. I went on the internet and tried to buy a copy. I don't know where to buy it. He goes, well, you have to subscribe. Name one subscriber. Okay. It was his brother.
Right. His brother subscribed?
That was it, too. Apparently, this thing, this newsletter that he made himself a great editor of and a publisher and everything else, had a circulation of one to his brother. All right?
But at least it was an appreciative audience.
There's always stuff. That's why experts are dangerous. You don't know. And I learned this right when I came into Vegas. The first trial I was at all involved in was a defense case where the expert on that case got caught lying all over his resume.
What fun for a attorney on the other side.
Yeah. All right. I like to be that attorney. That's one of the reasons I stay away from experting or experts.
All right. So let me do some commercials. And then I actually want to ask Richard how much fun he had being an expert witness. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. July is half price gas card month. Normally for $8,334 points, you can get $25 in cash or free play. For points earned and redeemed in July, you'll get a $50 Chevron card for that same number of points. Limit 10 cards per person per month. If you considered gas cards to be the same as cash, this is a form of double points for your first $83,000 of coin in for the month. At the Palms, they have 7 p.m. drawings each Friday in June. You need to swipe your card before 6:45, but you do not need to be there at the drawing so long as you pick up your prize prior to midnight. Each week, $10,000 is given away to 15 winners. You don't have to be there. The bad news is that if somebody doesn't show up, the prize is forfeited and it doesn't go to somebody else. You're in 5 times entries Friday and Saturday, 8 to midnight, and 2 times entries Sundays and Tuesdays. Play for prizes Monday through Friday for the first 2 complete weeks of the month, beginning this coming Monday. The primary prize is Bed Bath & Beyond gift cards. For the last 2 weeks of the month, the prizes will be gift cards to TJ Maxx or Marshalls. The rate for redeeming these prizes is 0.25% for video poker, and you keep the points. VideoPoker.com remains the best place to practice a wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, and many others. Often these games are the best returning games in a casino, and you need to practice to make sure you know how to play. They have contests every week. The weekly contests for this week are Ultimate X, Ultimate Aces, and Deal Draw Poker. On Ultimate X, I actually came across a phrase today that actually kind of excited me. If I say it wrong, Lawrence is going to beat me, so I'm going to try to say it right. But Ultimate X is a 10 coins per line game where each time you end up with a winning hand, you get a multiplier on that same line for the next hand. For example, in Double Double Bonus, straights earn you a multiplier of 8, flushes earn you a multiplier of 10, and full houses earn you a multiplier of 12. So the idea is to get your good hands, like royals, four of a kind, straight flushes, etc., on the hand after you get a full house, flush, or straight. Easier said than done, by the way. It happens I was reading an article on the website 538.com today, and it had an interesting name for this phenomenon. The article is called it cluster luck, meaning your lucky hands clustered together. I've always known what I needed to do with this game. I just never knew it was called cluster luck. All right, so Lawrence's hand was close to the button, but he didn't push it. All right, so Richard, did you enjoy being an expert witness? Will you do it again if asked?
I would do it again. I sort of felt like I didn't really know what I was doing, but it was really interesting because I always hear the player's side of these things. It was really interesting to hear the casino's ridiculous arguments and to see all the videotape that they had of, you know, the player playing and being detained and all that stuff. So it was interesting. I enjoyed it. It was kind of like having a big term paper, you know. I mean, it was a lot of reading, a lot of research, and then you got to write a paper, and you know. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Richard, can I ask what they used as your field of expertise?
Blackjack. I was there as a expert on card counters and blackjack. Yeah. That was the part that confused me. I didn't see really what blackjack had to do with the case.
All right. Now, I was an expert witness years ago before I was well known as a video poker player, and basically all my stuff was behind the scenes. Huh. And so I listened to the testimony in court. During the breaks, I would quickly tell the lawyer on our side what was wrong with the other arguments, and he would go out and do it. But I never, and the checks bounced the first time. Anyway, it was a mess.
Oh, learning about lawyers now.
All right, now we got about 3 minutes, I guess. There's a case in Indiana. Just came up. A video poker player is using a clicker, just a thing that you push and it increments by one, to count something in video poker, perhaps the number of hands since the last four of a kind, something. The casinos got tired of him, told him to hit the road. He then gets a call from the district attorney.
Well, they didn't just tell him to hit the road. They came and confiscated the clicker from him.
And then the district attorney says he's under arrest for using a device to cheat at gambling. Do you know anything about this case? Is it?
Well, I don't. I know about as much as you do.
Uh-huh. It's not going to take us 3 minutes then, will it?
Does this guy have anything to worry about is the question.
Oh, yeah. Not because he's done anything wrong, but he's in the criminal justice system with a prosecutor who as likely as not understands nothing. Okay? What I would cite to would be Tommy Hyland's case, and anybody can read about it on Blackjack Forum online from years ago in Windsor. It was the same kind of thing. His team members were using matches to, as I understand it, track money. It had nothing to even do with the game of blackjack, and they took that team in. Two women and I think a guy too, and prosecuted him. The prosecutor never understood what it was always double. If you read the stuff, he double talked his way right up to essentially an entire trial before a judge finally seems to have said, "Whoa, wait a minute. I get it. Go away."
Yeah.
But, so does he have an issue? He's got an issue. Can he get out of it? Let's hope so, because using a device to gain an advantage is generally the statute. I don't know Indiana statutes again. Maybe they prevent you from having a cell phone while you're sitting at a machine. Hard to say. But I can't see any way that a counter is going to be doing anything either than keeping track of money or keeping track of volume. It is not going to change any odds or increase payouts.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, I think, where, they were harassing the guy. I mean, they wanted to get rid of him, and they were tired of him, and, you know, they're going to do things to you when they don't like you.
Well, 86ing him is one thing, all right, but having the DA on you is something else. Thank you, Bob Nersessian. Richard, go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.